Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is another edition of the Greg Crawford on Sports Business Show. We do this show every Tuesday night at 10 o'clock. Kind of mix up the guests. We talk to a lot of talented people, though, always on this show, and we enjoy it. And part of sports business is basketball. So in just a little bit, we're going to get to Ben Golliver from SI.com. He does a tremendous job. I enjoy everything he does. So talented and going to be successful for many years to come in the journalism field. And, of course, it's Greg Crawford on Sports Business. I am Greg Crawford. You can follow me on Twitter at WCHoops. And don't forget, if you can't listen to this program live, which, boy, we got a lot of listeners. Ben has drawn them in tonight. If you can't listen live, this show is a podcast forever on the great Blog Talk Radio. But right now, let's bring in Ben Golliver from SI.com. And, Ben, how are you tonight?
I'm doing real well, getting ready to go up to the Bay Area tomorrow morning, get this finals going. It's a great time of year, and I'm pretty stoked about the matchup we've got.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. Ben, we're going to talk definitely about that, but I'd like for the people to get to know you. And actually, I never knew you or even had a conversation with you in a couple years ago when I was at Comcast Sportsnet. We worked one night on the Talk and Ball program. It was you, I, and Dwight, and I forget who was hosting, but we had a great time, and I walked out of there and said, man, that guy's got the it factor, and I'm going to keep in touch with that guy and everything, and the rest is history. Ben, where do you get your interest from basketball from?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. It's nice to talk hoops, and talk hoops with somebody who loves it. You know, I think I liked basketball from a really early age. You know, my dad went to Michigan State, and he had played in high school and was always into basketball, and he just happened to be a student there at the same time Magic Johnson was there. So you can imagine how that spurred his interest and his sort of pride in the school. And, you know, he ended up migrating west, you know, from Michigan to Oregon, you know, in the early 80s, and I kind of grew up as a, you know, a basketball fan. You know, really paying attention for the first time in the late 80s, early 90s, doing the basketball card collecting thing, you know, watching the Dream Team, really being into, you know, the Rip City Magic of, like, you know, Drexler, Porter, and then also, you know, getting totally swept up in, like, the Michael Jordan era of the NBA where, you know, it kind of just took off globally. So I've liked basketball, you know, since I could probably, you know, walk and talk. And it's, you know, kind of things kind of fell together pretty interestingly for me. You know, I was just working a normal office job doing marketing work after I graduated college in 2005. And, you know, the NBA draft in 2007 happened. The Blazers happened to get the number one pick in the lottery. And I just randomly on a whim decided to start a blog on Blogspot. And the whole blog idea was, you know, I was trying to get the Blazers to draft Kevin Durant. So the name of the blog was Draft Kevin Durant. And, of course, you know, that wasn't necessarily the most popular opinion at the time, especially in Portland. Everybody wanted Odin and kind of get swept up in it. And, you know, one thing led to another, and, you know, the writing from that blog kind of got me a spot with Blazers Edge, and it helped me meet a guy like Dwight, who you mentioned, and, you know, talk some basketball on Comcast, and just sort of one thing led to another from there. But I guess just to answer your original question, I mean, basically my whole life I love basketball.
Yeah, and I think that it shows all the time in your work and everything, and you had a nice little career with Blazers Edge and here in town and beyond, and then, you know, I still got to think that when you talk about journalism and everything, you know, kind of one of the top three Sports Illustrated, you're at SI.com, that's got to be a big thrill for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I was a kid, I remember, you know, we had moved into a new house, and my mom was like, okay, this is your bedroom. I was stoked to have my own room and everything. And, you know, she actually did, like, custom shelving in the closet for me, and it was just so that I could have the stacks of Sports Illustrated, because I had saved, you know, probably 500 copies of them, you know, basically every year back when I was getting the regular magazine and SI for kids. So I was just had so many of these magazines, and we had a kind of a custom shelf. So this shelf would be 93, this shelf would be 94 or whatever. And so, you know, I've been reading SI, you know, since the Rick Riley days and maybe even earlier than that. And, you know, I was at CBS for a couple years, you know, right when the internet really started taking off, I think with basketball was sort of like LeBron's first decision in 2010. And so I started at CBS right around that same time. And a couple years later, you know, it kind of, again, you know, kind of a fortuitous bounce for me, but things kind of worked out well. And I've loved SI. It's my third season with SI. They've been really good to me. And they love the basketball. I mean, a lot of sites out there, I think a lot of times, you know, there's sideshow stuff going on and, you know, all the style factor and the podium and all this other stuff. But I think what, you know, SI has always really cared about the sports, you know, before all else. And, you know, that's kind of where I've been at too. You know, I love basketball, just the actual game, the strategy, and all that stuff. And so I think it's been a pretty good fit.
Ben, shockingly, this is not about me tonight because you're such a special guest and I appreciate you coming on, but I think it, what was it, 75 when the Warriors San Francisco played the Washington Bullets at the time, and I was at one of the games and it was played at the Cow Palace. And so we've come a long ways with all these arenas and teams, but you know, that was pretty much the last great Warriors team or close to it, and it had some tremendous, it was a tremendous team. It was a team. But what do you think about this Warriors team? I mean, everyone kind of kept trying to write them off, and they're not written off yet.
Oh, no question. Well, to even mention the 75 team real quick, I mean, there's some parallels there with the Blazers championship team in 77, because when, and I've been up here, I'm going to go back to the Bay tomorrow, but I was spent some time up there these last couple weeks, you know, with their Western Conference Finals series and everything, and just the way the fans talk about you know, the team's history, focusing around that 75 team, it's very similar to me, like the 77 Blazers, you know, really kind of a similar vibe. I mean, if you go to the practice facility, they've got this huge banner that says 75 Warriors, you know, national champions, and it's just a very, very similar feel to the 77 team in terms of how there's like a folklore and a mystique about it. And so for someone who kind of grew up in Portland and, you know, was really steeped in that Blazers history, I was too young to kind of, you know, be at that championship parade. I wasn't even born yet, but I always heard people talking about how great it was. And you kind of have the same thing going on right now in the Bay Area, because you've got these fans who have suffered through some really tough times these last couple of decades, and now they're getting totally paid off with just this unbelievable team. And not only are they a great team, I mean, elite offense, elite defense, but they're also super fun to watch. I mean, they play at such a fast pace. They share the ball. They've got so many talented shooters, so many unselfish players. There isn't a bad guy on the roster, as far as I can tell. I mean, everybody seems like they get along. There's been a lot of, you know, checking the ego at the door. You know, guys like Iguodala and David Lee, who kind of have to give up their starting spots from last year you know, take reduced roles. And in some cases, you know, not too many minutes at all if you're talking about a guy like David Lee. I mean, it just seems like everything has gone together perfectly for them. And so, you know, for these fans, I mean, imagine, you know, just imagine taking that Warriors rosters and dropping it in Portland and how crazy the Blazer Maniacs would be about it. I mean, that's really the vibe down in Oakland right now. And especially because you look at other things like, you know, the Raiders might move, the A's are in trouble. I mean, you've got all these rumors about, hey, maybe these teams are moving out of town. And so for right now, they've got, you know, the best show on earth in these Golden State Warriors, and they're really stoked about it.
And they really have had a tremendous fan base. Even when they would win 20 games a year, they got a loud fan base. They got a fanatic following, and it's quite a history with this team.
Oh, the building's incredible. I mean, and actually, I would say that about the Cleveland building too. You know, I was kind of popping back and forth during the conference finals. I mean, both of those home crowds are excellent, and they're going to give real home court advantages. I know there was a lot of talk this year about, hey, home court advantage doesn't mean quite as much as it used to. Road teams are doing better than you would expect when you crunch the numbers in terms of the regular season, how they're performing. Both these teams have been excellent at home during the postseason, and I expect that to kind of continue in the finals because, you know, the crowds are really getting ramped up. I mean, the Cleveland, their fans are just as thirsty for a championship as the Warriors fans are, because they've never had one before. They've had so much, you know, bum luck, whether it's the Browns, the Indians, going right down the list. So it's going to be nice. The one nice thing about this finals, I think, from a historical perspective, is somebody gets to win. Somebody who hasn't won in a long time. It's a little bit of new blood. One of those franchises is going to get to call themselves champion, and it's, you know, going to be at least 40 years since that's happened with either one of these teams.
You know, and wrapping up the Golden State Warriors, Ben, in this final. We've heard a lot about, well, Steve Kerr made the brilliant move to turn down Phil Jackson. Nobody thought he would, but he did, and to go out to Golden State and everything. But we haven't really heard a lot about, and maybe there isn't a large impact, but what kind of footprint does Jerry West have on this team? I know a lot of people don't even know that he's the consultant with them, and you know, I thought he was, you know, maybe not that great of a coach in the NBA, tremendous player, but he certainly is a good talent evaluator.
Well, I think the really key role that he played with this organization was, remember, when they got bought by these current owners, these guys were NBA newbies. I mean, they never owned their own franchise before, and they didn't really know how things worked. They didn't necessarily have any credibility, and they were taking over an organization that had been really bad for a long time, you know, and it had been actually kind of dysfunctional in a lot of cases. And so what Jerry West did is he just brought that instant credibility. Well, now all of a sudden, you know, these guys mean business. If the owners are going to, you know, cut Jerry West in here, give him a percentage, and give him a job title and use, you know, his expertise, then clearly they mean business and they're really serious about trying to win. And I think that's really what you've seen in terms of the follow through from the ownership group, is that these guys are really serious. I mean, they wanted to turn this franchise completely around, and they really stuck to that every single step of the way. I mean, it hasn't always been easy, but you look at that Kerr hiring, excellent hiring. And, you know, Jerry West, I mean, he's not a day-to-day presence. I mean, you don't necessarily see him at all of these games. I mean, they've got the GM in Bob Myers, you know, executive of the year. You know, he's kind of out front. He's the public face. You've got Steve Kerr, who's just got the media eating out of his hand. I mean, he's just an unbelievable communicator. And so those are the kind of the two faces of the organization, I think, right now. But Jerry West, I mean, you read some stories about how he's, you know, mentoring a player here, offering advice on a trade there. I mean, he's just sort of in the background, almost like a godfather type of figure, you know, helping steer these guys the right direction. So I think that's probably the best way to put it. But, you know, they did a lot of work here these last couple of years in terms of assembling this team. You look back at these drafts, I mean, Draymond Green in the draft, Harrison Barnes in the draft, Klay Thompson in the draft, Steph Curry in the draft. I mean, that is one heck of a hot streak in terms of, you know, selecting your talent. And you got to believe a guy like Jerry West, who, you know, reached the peak as a player, had some say-so in a lot of those moves.
And I said to wrap up the Warriors, but I got one more question for you before we talk about the Cavaliers. But, Ben, what do you see as the future of Luke Walton? And, of course, this town's had a love affair with his dad for years, Bill Walton, and now Luke, assistant coach there with the Warriors. Do you think he's headed to be a head coach at some point in the NBA?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you already see in the copycat stuff, right? I mean, how long did it take Alvin Gentry to get a job? And they didn't start the finals before he got hired by the Pelicans. So
yeah.
Everybody's looking at Golden State, and they're saying, look, those guys won 67 games. They sold out every single game. The fan base is nuts. They're buying jerseys and memorabilia like crazy. How can we get a little slice of that and bring that back to our team? And so everybody's got, you know, if you're on that staff right now, you've really got that shine. You know, you're the top dog. And it's going to be especially true if they finish this off and win the championship like I think a lot of people expect. I mean, that has a big-time benefit for everybody on that staff, because all of a sudden, you know, you've got the ring, and you've also – they have a sense, too, I think, that they're, like, on the cutting edge of NBA strategy, right, because they're playing so fast, and yet they're able to have such an efficient offense while also having an efficient defense. They shoot tons of three-pointers. I mean, all the things you're supposed to do in the modern NBA in terms of protecting the rim, you know, spreading the floor, shooting three-pointers. The Warriors do all of those things. And so, again, that makes the coaches look great, because everybody around the league is saying, like, we want to get on the cutting edge. How do we modernize our team? How do we get our coaching staff to be even smarter? And let's go look at the Warriors and maybe see if we can pull one of their guys, you know, away and add them to our staff. So, you know, specifically about Luke Walton, you know, I don't know of any particular rumors right now, but I do think, generally speaking, like, if you're on the fastest boat, that's a good place to be.
We're speaking with Ben Golliver from SI.com. You can tell he's tremendous. You better follow his career just like you follow an athlete, because he's probably wind up covering the President of the United States someday. Maybe he'll get out of sports. Who knows? Or whatever he wants to do, he's going to be successful at. Ben, you know, the Cavaliers, obviously you can't count them out. Of anything. I hear a lot of people saying this is going to be four games. That's to me, that's ridiculous. LeBron James, the best player in basketball. They're not maybe the most healthy team around, but they are a dangerous team, and they know how to win now.
Oh, no question. I mean, they've done a great job of almost like a chameleon. I mean, they're like changing their personality on the fly here. You know, they start the season and they're supposed to be a rebuilding team. Then they get LeBron, and then all of a sudden now they're the big three superstar team. And then Kevin Love goes down, and all of a sudden now they've morphed into this almost scrappy, overachieving group around LeBron. It's sort of like LeBron and the Musketeers or something like that. You know, I mean, you've got guys like Dellavedova, Tristan Thompson. I mean, these guys are just playing totally, you know, over their heads in terms of, you know, there's a certain level of talent there, but these guys are definitely overachieving and they're really maxing out. And part of it is LeBron sets them up for success because he's such a smart player and such a gifted passer that he puts these guys in situations where they can succeed. You know, they're not asking Dellavedova to cut through the lane, beat four people off the dribble, and toss in a reverse dunk. I mean, that's not his game. They're just saying, look, if you get a spot up three, knock it down, and LeBron will find you. And he's been able to do that. I also think that, you know, the midseason additions in terms of Mozgov, J.R. Smith, and Iman Shumpert, you know, those are true two-way players, all three of those guys. You know, Shumpert is known as a defensive player, but he can shoot it a little bit. I think J.R. Smith is known as a streaky scorer. But he can D up, you know, when he really is locked in, he can provide a little bit of perimeter defense for you. And then Mozgov, you know, he's a pretty talented rim protector, just a big body. And then at the same time, you know, he's not going to be a big negative on offense. I mean, he can finish around the basket a little bit, and they know how to use him, whether it's pick and rolls or just kind of, you know, offensive rebounds, that kind of stuff, right? When you have three two-way players that you can put around LeBron, that's a pretty nice combo. You know, that's pretty good, and especially if Kyrie can get healthy. I mean, to me, he's sort of the X factor of the finals. If he's not 100% or close to it, I have a really hard time seeing how they're going to beat Golden State just because there's not really anywhere to hide an injured player. You know, you can't hide him on Steph Curry, of course. You can't have him chasing Klay Thompson around. That's not going to work. You can't even really hide him on Harrison Barnes because Harrison Barnes will take you into the post. Just like, you know, he did at times in Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals, and he can get you some, you know, real offensive production. So, you know, to me, they really need Kyrie to be healthy so he can do his best to stick with Curry, and he's not a huge liability on defense. And they're going to need him on the other end, too. You know, LeBron can't do it all by himself. He does need to have a second scorer if they can find one. So, to me, Kyrie's the X factor for them right now, but I do give a lot of credit not only to LeBron for sort of carrying this huge load while all of his teammates have kind of been injured, and they've tried to kind of come together with this new identity. But I also give David Blatt some credit, too, because, you know, at times he's had to make some strategic decisions, like starting Tristan Thompson. You know, originally in game one of that second round series against the Bulls, you know, he wanted to start Mike Miller because he was looking for the shooting once Kevin Love was out. Well, that didn't work at all. And some coaches would try it again and try it again and try it again. And Blatt went a different direction. He said, look, it's not working. I got to get rid of it. Let's try something else right now. He starts Tristan Thompson in game two, and boom, they've gone 8-1 since Thompson moved in the starting lineup. They sweep finals, and Thompson's playing excellent basketball. So I think sometimes, you know, stuff like that maybe doesn't get as much attention as it should, but credit to Blatt for how he's kind of managed this adversity over the last couple of months. And then, of course, credit to LeBron for, like you said, being the best player in the world and making everybody else look good.
All right, Ben, before we get to kind of our lightning round where I want to ask you other important topics, if you want to make a prediction, and you certainly don't have to, but if you want to, who wins this thing?
Yeah, I've got Warriors in six, and just the one word I kept coming back to when I was trying to make my prediction was preparation. Because I look at the Warriors' like path to the finals. You know, they got New Orleans where they're going to have to throw a bunch of different guys at Anthony Davis, you know, a big-time superstar. I mean, that's pretty good preparation for a guy like LeBron. How are you going to throw different bodies at him, different defensive schemes? Then they get Memphis, who's going to slow it down. They're very good defensively. They pound the glass with guys like Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol. I think that's really good preparation for the Cavs. They've been playing pretty slow in the postseason. You know, they also have, you know, Thompson and Mozgov, who are really good offensive rebounders. And they're also pretty good defensively. So that's good preparation for all those things. And then I look at the Houston Rockets, and those guys love to shoot the three ball. And they've got two superstars in James Harden and Dwight Howard. And the Cavaliers, again, you know, they've got two superstars in LeBron and Kyrie, and they love to shoot the three ball. So it's like each one of these steps the Warriors has taken, it's kind of like a slow, gradual ramp up to the finals where they're kind of learning these different skills. They're testing themselves against these different matchups. And I think they're going to be very well prepared for the Cavaliers. And when I flip it around, I'm not sure I could say the same thing about Cleveland because, you know, you look at that Boston team, they were under 500. You look at Chicago, they kind of imploded. They end up firing their coach, Tom Thibodeau. They had a lot of distractions and sort of dark clouds hanging around that team. And you look at Atlanta, they were just way too injured, and they're just not on the same level as a Golden State. So I'm not sure Cleveland is totally prepared and ready for guys like Steph Curry. I mean, how do you really handle them? They haven't really had a test that's similar. You know, guys like Jeff Teague or Derrick Rose coming off an injury, they're just not really on the same level as a Steph Curry. So to me, I like the Warriors in this series primarily because I think they're more prepared for it. And obviously, I think they're healthier, they're more talented in general. And I think this is going to be their time. I think they're going to be able to do it.
Very good. We're talking with Ben Golliver, SI.com. He is tremendous, and you can tell that just listening to him, and he's a tremendous writer, so multifaceted. He could either be on TV, radio, or in the print, and that's what it's all about nowadays in the journalistic field. We got about 9 minutes left, Ben, so I want to kind of go around the NBA, some hot topics. Actually, the great part about Blog Talk Radio, we got people listening in 17 countries tonight that I can count here. So that is really good. But also, you and I both have a long history here in Portland. Where does LaMarcus Aldridge wind up next year, in your opinion?
That's a really tough question. I'm not sure I have a great read on it. I do think the original signals kind of coming out of Portland aren't great. But at the end of the day, you know, Portland can offer the most money, and Portland has been his home, and those are two really strong factors. I do think one team that hasn't really been talked about a lot that's worth keeping an eye on is the Houston Rockets. I think he'd fit really well next to their two superstars. You know, he would complete the big three that you kind of need to be a championship contender. He's talked a lot about wanting to win. That's a team that was in the Western Conference Finals this year. They've got a really creative GM who can kind of figure out the cap gymnastics to try to figure out a way to make him, make it work there in terms of giving him the max money and getting him in there with the other guys they already have on the books. And I also think, in terms of, kind of the hometown angle, I mean, obviously he's from Dallas, but, you know, sometimes you don't want to necessarily go back straight home. You just want to be kind of close. You know, Texas has that favorable tax situation. I think the San Antonio Spurs are definitely another player for him. But I kind of wonder if he watched the playoffs this year at all, and he saw Houston kind of get onto the brink of really almost being there in the finals. I wonder if that kind of a thing could pull him that direction. But I still think it's early, and I think you're going to have multiple players in the LaMarcus Aldridge sweepstakes. I think he's going to be one of the biggest names this summer. And certainly we've got weeks and weeks of rumors to get through before we ever find out what he decides.
Is Dwayne Wade going to be one of the biggest stories this year? Because it's just kind of interesting. There's just some guys that seem like they better be with the same team for the majority of their career, and he's one of those guys. Do you really think he's going there, or is it just posturing?
Yeah, I think it's just a public negotiation. I mean, to me, it seems like he didn't like the offers that he was hearing about. And it was like, look, let's take this to the media. Let's let the fans decide. Let's put some pressure on the front office, and let's get that offer raised up a little bit. You know, he's made multiple sacrifices that he didn't have to make on these contracts, especially for a guy who's put in as many years as he has with the Heat. He's unbelievably popular down in South Florida. I mean, seeing it during the finals years, I mean, he was just so popular, even I think arguably more popular than LeBron down there. It reminded me of like Brandon Roy in Portland when he was sort of at his heyday. I mean, that's kind of like the way the fans react towards Wade. So to me, I think they're going to have to find a way to get that done. He can still play too. I mean, he was a pretty good player this year. I mean, he had to miss some time with the injuries and management and all that. But to me, he's the kind of guy you figure out how to make it work because he's your franchise. He's the guy the fans identify with. And ultimately, they want to be back making deep postseason runs. I don't really see how they do that without him, if you know what I mean.
Very good. In the history of the NBA and in all of sports, I think one thing that doesn't get talked about that much is there's generally always friction between the general manager, the management, and the coach. We don't always hear about it. Some teams hide it well, but egos are involved. But in Chicago, there has been a long history going all the way back to when the franchise first came there, of friction between the GM, the personnel, and then the coach. Is Fred Hoiberg going to succeed in, you know, and it's really early, obviously. Will he succeed in Chicago?
Well, I think he's facing the same problem that Thibodeau faces, which is you could be a genius. If Derrick Rose isn't 100% or close to it, what's it really going to matter? You know, I mean, that's your franchise guy. That's the guy you're paying $20-plus million to. He's on the long-term max contract. Everything's built around him. And to a lesser degree, Joakim Noah, too. I mean, Noah did not look right at all in the postseason this year. I mean, you almost didn't even have to guard him in the second round if you're the Cavaliers because he was just doing nothing on offense. So if your key guys aren't healthy, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, you could have John Wooden as the Bulls coach, you know, or anybody, you know, Red Auerbach, go right down the list, Phil Jackson. It's not going to matter. So I think, you know, Chicago's got a lot of work to do this summer. I mean, they got to re-sign Jimmy Butler. They've got to explore their options in terms of kind of upgrading their talent. They're not going to have a lot of flexibility. You know, can they bring along some of these guys like a Doug McDermott? I mean, can that guy develop into a rotation player for them under Hoiberg? I think that's the kind of thing the coach is going to want to focus on here, especially in the short term, because they're kind of stuck with their pieces. You know, Powell's going to come back. You know, Rose is going to be under contract. I mean, all of the basic pieces are pretty much going to be the same next year. And to be honest, I think Thibodeau is the kind of coach who's going to get the most out of what's there. I mean, I don't think, you know, I think he squeezed every drop of water out of that towel, you know? And so if they really have championship expectations, like they want to be better than the Cavaliers, they want to be the number one team in the East next year, I'm not sure a coaching change is really going to accomplish that unless Hoiberg is really able to push some buttons for these guys who just weren't really contributors this year. But, you know, I guess I'm a little bit skeptical. You know, I'm kind of a Thibodeau guy. I mean, I think he's got a great personality. I think he really is an innovator when it comes to his defensive strategies. Everybody's been copying what he's done these last couple. He really got, nice postseason seeding, and, you know, they advanced multiple times despite a whole bunch of injuries. I think sometimes when you're just that demanding, you know, you kind of wear on the players, and the players were just ready for a different voice. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I see them as a top four team in the East next year, you know, just based on their talent. And whether Hoiberg's able to kind of pull a Steve Kerr, I guess that remains to be seen. But they're going to be right in the mix. Whether they can kind of conquer, you know, Mount LeBron, I'm not so sure.
I'm just kind of throwing this out. We got about 90 seconds left, Ben. If the Cleveland doesn't win that, something tells me that Thibodeau is going to wind up being the coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. There isn't much left out there for him to go to, but maybe he'll sit out, collect the money, and go on one of the networks and be a commentator. But to me, I'll tell you one thing. I think they might make a change in Cleveland. They don't win all this.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, Blatt has really been an up-and-down year. I think he's done a pretty good job of being flexible here in the postseason. Of course, you know, he's pretty much had to scrap everything he wanted to do and just kind of give the reins to LeBron. And so you always kind of wonder, you know, if a player is calling the shots, you know, what does that mean for the coach's future? And that's a fair question. You know, if I was Thibodeau, I might just wait a season. You know, I might let cash the Bulls checks a little bit, wait for really desirable jobs to open up, maybe heading into the following year, because you know he's going to be the number one name on the market. You know, I mean, that's just sort of his reputation on the league, is he's a guy who's going to be a really, really top-shelf coach. You know, if I were him, I might think about taking a year off, you know, maybe just kind of getting a different perspective on life, because he's really been going through a grind here for quite a while. I think he spent 5 years in Chicago. They were in the playoffs every year. I mean, those are lots of long nights and film sessions, and everybody talks about his sort of maniacal work ethic. I'm not so sure, you know, a little time off and a little perspective, it might be good for him. You never know, but we'll see. I mean, a lot hinges on these finals, I think is what you're getting at in terms of Blatt and the Cavaliers' future, and I think that's totally fair and accurate, and we'll see how it plays out over the next couple of weeks.
He's Ben Golliver from SI.com. He was tremendous tonight. He's tremendous always. And Ben, we'll bring you back once free agency kind of parses out. How's that sound?
That sounds good. Well, thanks for having me on.
You have a great finals. Enjoy them, Ben. And it was our pleasure to have you on. And we'll definitely bring you back on Greg Crawford on Sports Business. Good night, everybody. Thank you, Ben. And thank you, listeners. And don't forget to make all your free throws. Good night, everyone.